This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show. This session shares my conversation with candidate for town council, Alan Earls. This is one of a series of conversations with candidates for the Franklin election on November 2nd, 2021. I do this to provide Franklin, Mass. Voters with accurate and timely info that they can use to cast an informed vote. Publication of the answers or interview responses does not constitute an endorsement of this or any other candidate. We cover the candidate questions as previously developed in conjunction with the community and shared with the candidates in advance. Five of the questions are general in nature. The sixth is specific to the role of the candidate, in this case, for the town council. Our conversation runs about 19 minutes. So let's listen to my interview with Alan Earls. Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet at WFPR.FM in any browser, and on the local Franklin area FM dial at 102.9, here for another candidate session preparing for election 2021 here in Franklin. We've got a town council candidate, Alan Earls. Alan, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Steve. As always, appreciate the opportunity you provide for us to share ideas and viewpoints.
You're welcome. This is, you know, as what I've said to others, and hopefully people won't get bored listening to me, but this is my public service effort to create informed voters.
Absolutely.
So it's not so much my platform as, right, you know, getting your story out so people will figure out what's going on.
And I appreciate that, but kudos to you because you've been doing it for a decade plus and it's made a difference in the town.
Yeah. So, thank you. So if somebody doesn't know who Alan Earls is by this point, you know, briefly, tell us something of your Franklin story and tell us about your life here.
I'll try to make it brief. You know how it is when you ask people to tell you about themselves, they'll go on for an hour. I'll try not to do that.
I'll try to cut you off if it goes more than an hour.
Born in Massachusetts, out in central Mass, grew up in the western suburbs of Boston, married and moved here in the late 1980s, and subsequently started a family with my then wife, who's still a Franklin resident. And raised a couple of sons here. Did so as partly through private schools, partly homeschooling for a short period of time, and then through the public schools and Ben Franklin Charter School. I've been in active in town government in one way or another, at, you know, mostly lower level, almost since I arrived. When I came aboard, there was an industrial development commission, because back then, believe it or not, Franklin was still trying to attract people to the town. It was still kind of a small town. And I was involved with business journalism, and I had, you know, I thought a useful background. So I'd gotten involved with that. I helped produce some marketing material for the town. And then later on in the later 90s, I was on the open space committee and occasionally raised my hand and sounded off about other things. Did that for a few years and then got involved with the historical commission. And I've been involved with that off and on as either a member or associate member or just a hanger on since then. I did run for council last fall in a special election. My son Eamon had served as a councilor for one term, had been elected to a second term. And then for better or for worse, he got a tremendous scholarship opportunity to go to law school. So I raised my hand to run to take the seat that he had held. And several other people did as well, including Kobe Frangillo, who ran an amazing campaign and set all of the rest of us back on our heels a bit. But I'm giving it another bite at the apple. And the other thing in the meantime, speaking about your pioneer role as a citizen journalist here in Franklin, taking a page from your notebook, so to speak, and taking advantage of an opportunity that was offered by a big national company that provides platforms, I launched something called Franklin Observer to really complement what you're doing with other kinds of news, additional coverage. And that's been, I hope, useful, very instructive for me. I've finally gotten busy visiting almost every relatively obscure committee and commission in town at one time or another. And there's some interesting and important stuff going on there. So that's the probably already too long version of me. I'll add one other thing that will probably come around to it. I tend to be, you know, I lean fiscal conservative and I lean conservative in a lot of things, but I don't think of myself as an ideologue and I don't think of myself as someone who is opposed to change. I actually like and favor change as long as it's thoughtful. I'm often somebody rocking the boat and trying to get things done different or better, but that's just a little codicil to everything else I said.
No, that's fine. And I think that appropriately, that's, you know, a brief piece. And I think there's enough other sources for your between Absolutely. Your writings, et cetera, sure. that people can get, they can dig in. And then of course sure. we'll include in the show notes as well, any contact info so they can follow up as well.
Of course.
And touching on one of the pieces that you mentioned, it'll give us a good segue into our next question here. In terms of your local involvement, clearly participating in elections is one of the key freedoms of American life. And voting is one of the primary responsibilities of citizens. While the law does not require citizens to vote, voting is very important and part of any democracy. So what can you tell us about your own voting record? And if you've not been an active voter, sure. Please tell us why. And how important is it that we elect people who are, like yourself, at least active in not just the election process, but in the process of government?
Sure. Well, to the first part of the question, I think I've been a pretty active voter pretty much since the 90s. There were times in my life where I was younger, moving around from one location to another. I'm not sure my voter registration ever followed me, or I may have been busy with the things that parents are, or the young children are busy with, and voting was probably low on the list at some points. But in general, I've been a pretty active person. I think I still am. And I think it's very important, again, given that people's situations can change, and there may be very good reasons for someone not voting. I wouldn't hold that against someone as a principal concern. It is a concern, obviously. You'd like to see people who have been engaged in the electoral process, but there may be reasons for not being engaged. And it's interesting, you know, you asked the question. I think a lot of people aren't aware that is another part of our identity that is public record, how we vote and when we vote. Not how we vote. I shouldn't say that, because I think that's part of the secret
ballot. Just the fact that you showed up that is recorded.
That's one of those wonderful sources of public record information that helps us assemble a picture of the world around us if we can dig in and do it.
And have the time to do so.
Exactly, yes.
And segueing again into kind of the public health question, have sure. you been vaccinated for COVID-19? Do you think there should be a mask mandate? But really more important, I think the bigger issue that right. there is the next line, where finally, what measures should government take to protect the public from the virus? Right. And how should those efforts be delineated between local, state, and federal governments?
Good questions all. For the first question, I'm going to share the reticence of some other people who feel, well, let me back up. I feel like almost everything associated with COVID has become politicized. Mm. At the very beginning, I remember watching on television with my wife the reports from China with pictures of multiple gigantic hospitals being built to deal with COVID. And I turned to her and said, wow, this is really something. This is going to affect us. And I went down to my friends at the Dario Hardware and bought a box of N95 masks. That was in January. I started wearing them. People came up to me and said, why are you wearing a mask? Dr. Fauci says it doesn't matter. You don't need a mask. So case in point, the advice has changed all over the map. I think people have become jaded, cynical, et cetera. And because of that, I think it should not be part of the political discussion. You know, as I made clear, I put the mask on. I have personal health concerns that make me concerned about this, but I do feel like answering the question makes it even more political. So I'd rather not do that. And as far as whether there should be a mask mandate in Franklin, I think right now, no. We have some serious concerns with the second wave or a third wave or whatever it is. And we should be mindful of that and watch it. It feels like we don't really have the situation that merits that yet. And to your next question, good questions. There's been such a confusion of policies again from the get-go because it's been politicized. You know, whether you're for or against something became a referendum on how you looked at the world politically, which is very unfortunate. To people who say there should not be a vax mandate, I say, well, you know, I'm old enough to remember when all of us, mm-hmm. little children and adults, had a little smallpox scar on our arm. Mm-hmm. Smallpox is a much more serious disease than COVID. But nonetheless, our standards of what constitutes a public health concern have grown as medicine has grown. So I'm avoiding the question because I don't have an answer. I think each layer of government has a role. It would be nice, again, if it could be less politicized and more rational. And there's blame to go around aplenty, I think, on all parts of this political spectrum, because, you know, some people are saying no, nay, never to things that might be pretty rational steps. And other people are acting like if you have any question, then you're, you know, in league with Satan. And I don't think either of those positions are constructive. So I'm going to leave it at that.
So moving into more of the Franklin stuff, and I know you've been on the forefront in a number of areas in this space as well. So what do you think are the three most important actions you believe are needed to move Franklin forward?
Yeah, and that's always tough because I'm not being actually on the town council. My views and understandings are not as clear as someone who's on the council about a lot of things. And I also hesitate. I think it's easy for voters to say, what are you going to do for me? Or what? How are you going to address this, that, or the other thing? And when you get in there, it may be different. But I have three kind of strategic, longer-term things that I think would really help the town be a better place and have a better and stronger political culture and get us moved forward. The first and foremost is changing our charter. For a while, I don't know the exact history, but I think about 20, actually almost 30 years ago, we had a town council with about 15 members. There was a member from each of the precincts and then a number of members at large. I understand some people felt that got unwieldy, and now that we're potentially adding precincts because we're a growing town. If we have, in any case, I think there needs to be some connection between precincts or areas of the town and at least one person on the council. Because otherwise, this whole exercise ends up being a popularity contest, A. And B, as a consequence, no single councilor ever owes his or her political future to delivering anything specific for a town. You know, theoretical things. But if people on the north end of town feel the ambulances aren't getting there fast enough, who do they complain to? Any or all the councilors is the answer. But none of those people are going to necessarily feel compelled to go out on a limb and really push for that. Or potholes or something in the center of the town, or traffic lights that don't work. So I think that should be part of it. It's a long process, unfortunately, to change a charter, but I think we should look at it because I think it would produce better civic engagement. People would really know they had someone to go to that was answerable to them. Second, and I know this is probably something you would agree to, the FinCom has great people. They do great research and great work, and they regularly produce, you know, reports and advice that are equally regularly ignored. Again, I don't know or pretend to fully understand town finances at all, but I really think FinCom should be sitting down with town council at least quarterly and giving people a read for what the realities are, what the future looks like. And last but not least, you know, I think many people look at government and say, they're spending our money. They don't know what they're doing. There's always some truth to that, but it should never be an excuse for just throwing up your hands. However, I really feel like the town can and should, with its own resources as much as possible, do a top to bottom examination of how spending is conducted, probably engaging with the FinCom, maybe involving citizens and members of people who work for the town in some kind of suggestion program, or maybe a reward program for doing things better with fewer resources, that sort of thing. I mean, if people aren't incented, you know, if you work for a department and you can see them wasting money, but you're not going to get any benefit from improving that, why rock the boat? Why go against what your boss says? Maybe a tall order, and probably an outside person would be helpful to that. But I know towns regularly spend a lot of money on outside reports for one thing or another. And, you know, you may not get bang for your buck when you do that. Again, this might be a little radical, but at some point, as you know, we're going to start running up against financial challenges. That was being talked about before COVID came along and changed a lot of the game. So I think also having a process in place where we can begin to make sure that the spending we're doing is the best possible spending it can be. Not taking a shot at any particular department. I think probably all departments could find a way to do things better for a given amount of spending.
And the last of the five standard questions or broad questions across all the candidates for the listeners to remind them as well. Yeah. What experience or background would help you to serve in this role? Or another way to phrase it, you know, what do you bring to the table that helps to set you apart from the other candidates?
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve. Well, I alluded to some of that earlier. I have been at least peripherally involved with town government for a long time. I try to pay attention And with Franklin Observer, especially, I'm being given a whole lot of homework assignments where I'm actually going out and meeting with a lot of the people, and finding out what's going on at the planning board, design review board, or the cultural council, and getting a feel for that. So I think that's a plus. You know, I think I'm really a pretty good listener. Some people get frustrated with me because they think I'm too low key, maybe, but I don't like to just sound off until I'm really pretty darn sure that I see the right way or the best way forward. And that also means typically when I've been on a committee or in some kind of deliberative body, there'll be people yelling this way and yelling that way and trying to convince each other of something that's mutually incompatible. And a lot of times I'm the guy that comes out with kind of a third way or a better way or a way of rephrasing things where everyone could say, yeah, that really works. Let's do that. So I think in a deliberative situation, I can be a constructive player. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm not a particularly egotistical kind of guy. I don't know. You've known me for a while, Steve. I'm just that rumpled guy who wanders around town and has opinions. So for better or for worse, that's who I still am, I think.
Indeed. And the final town council particular question, sure. I know you've been aware of it, but the council certainly approves the annual budget, which in turn really sets the priorities for how Franklin operates. How do you see the financial priorities we should address? And how do you explain to voters and residents why you would vote that way?
Yeah, I mean, that's a broad question. And I don't, as I sort of mentioned earlier, I don't have a deep knowledge of exactly where the money goes or why. Clearly we need fire and police. My Franklin Observer obsession with listening to the police scanner has made me realize that these people are pretty darn busy a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Impressively so. Having said that, there are situations where you wonder where the taxpayer is getting their money's worth. I won't name particular situations, but I know there's an individual who regularly calls 911 because this individual needs help getting in and out of their car due to some physical problem. Clearly they need help, but I wonder if something better could be found than sending out a 7-ton piece of equipment to help them get in and out of their vehicle. Small thing. We need police, fire. We definitely need to have schools. Schools should be as good as they possibly can be. I think Franklin schools are good. They could certainly be better. And again, my sense is that the Franklin schools, you know, I'll be controversial. I think there's been a tendency to make them comfortable for people that are within the Franklin education bureaucracy, if you will. And don't use the bureaucracy in a nasty way. It's just it's a big organization with hundreds of people. And I think we need to continually try to refresh what it means for students and families that our interface with the public schools to make sure, again, we're getting the most bang for our buck. I mean, that's probably pretty non-specific. People would probably like it to be more specific, but I don't think I can be more specific with what I know. I can just tell you, I think we can do better and we should always try to do better.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you for taking time to share your views on these questions. And certainly, as you're aware, this by having these set of questions across all the candidates, yep. all it's much more comparative for people to make an informed sure. vote. And final question, of course, is there something else that you want to say to leave with the voter that we haven't covered?
Well, you know, I you shouldn't have asked. back to the question about COVID, which I think you said is asked of every candidate. It's not a terrible question, but in my view, it's potentially divisive. I note that you're going to be asking a question of planning board candidates that is not quite in the same category, but it effectively puts a number of the candidates, probably the people who've been there for a while, in a category of special creation where, you might question their motives. And I actually join you in that. I've been concerned about the planning board for a long time. But again, particularly having spent a lot of time at planning board meetings recently, I'm so impressed that a lot of those people who've been there a while really know a lot about development issues and construction issues. So I just think it's worth pointing out that is a positive for the town. There are other things that don't have good optics and maybe bear scrutiny, but I just want to point that one thing out.
Sure. Thank you.
Cool. All right.
All right. Well, thanks again. And on behalf of the voters and residents, we thank you as well. And till wish you the best of luck in November 2nd, and I'm sure we'll see Steve. Each other along the way.
We absolutely will. That. You betcha, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Take care.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.